This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump refuses to say whether he would accept the results of the U.S. presidential election. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. In the final debate leading up to the vote on November 8, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump were asked to expound on a range of topics, including the composition of the Supreme Court, immigration, the economy, and foreign policy. But Donald Trump's assertion that he might not honor the results of the election overshadowed it all.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, and the pile-on is so amazing. It's so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters. But unfortunately for them, I think the voters are seeing through it.
Donald Trump speaking at the final presidential debate. A wide range of people from across the political spectrum, including many Republican lawmakers, have criticized Mr. Trump's statement, saying it is unprecedented for a major party nominee to call into question the very legitimacy of our political system. A basic tenet of U.S. democracy is the willingness of one side to accept defeat at the polls and acknowledge the legitimacy of the winning party. Mr. Trump has been consistently telling supporters over the past weeks that he does not believe the poll results, reflecting he is trailing Hillary Clinton, and furthered his warnings of election fraud. He has renewed attacks on media outlets, which he has said throughout his run for president are treating him unfairly. To that, President Obama said that Trump should, quote, stop whining and instead focus on convincing voters to support him in next month's election. However, disclosures from Secretary Clinton's tenure as the country's top diplomat from 2009 to 2013 and her use of a private, unsecured email server rather than a secured government server continue to raise questions for some voters about her judgment and honesty. Following the release of an audio tape a few weeks ago in which Mr. Trump bragged about sexually assaulting women, his rhetoric has become more and more incendiary. Meantime, an average of major political polls from the past 2 weeks indicate that Clinton is surpassing Mr. Trump by about 7 points. Well, with us to analyze the fallout from the final debate and to what extent it may influence the outcome of the election are two distinguished analysts. William Galston is chair in governance studies and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and that's a public policy group based here in Washington. Bill also previously served as a policy advisor to former President Bill Clinton. And Ben Domenech. He's publisher of the online magazine The Federalist. And Ben co-founded Red State, that's a widely read conservative blog. And Bill Galston joins us from a studio at the Brookings Institution. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
And Ben Domenech is making his debut on Encounter. He joins us at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Well, Ben, let's start with you here in the studio. I'd like to get your reaction, especially to Mr. Trump's refusal to pledge that he would honor the election results. Does that statement, to some extent, overshadow much of the policy discussion, which was rather interesting in and of itself?
This was a substantive debate, surprising considering the nature of the earlier ones. And moderator Chris Wallace did, I think, the best job yet of managing two candidates who have really gone after each other in a very aggressive manner over the course of this election, and particularly in the context of the debates. But I do think that was somewhat overshadowed by this decision on Mr. Trump's part to make this statement, to double down on it in a way when asked about whether he would respond to an election where many analysts expect him to lose by authenticating the result and conceding gracefully. Trump did nothing of the kind, and this is something that I think is unprecedented in a certain sense. We've seen in the past candidates who lost elections and then exercised legal efforts to obtain recounts, to fight for the election. We've even seen quotes from a number of different former presidential candidates. Just last year, John Kerry told The New Yorker that he retained doubts that the election in Ohio was above board in his own contest in 2004. What we have not seen is candidates themselves roll out the possibility of a rigged election or for a corrupted election prior to the vote taking place. That is something that is unprecedented in our history. And I think it speaks to the overall trend that we've seen that has elevated Mr. Trump to this point, which is a decline in faith among the American people in our institutions and in the form of our governance.
Bill Galston at the Brookings Institution, your reaction to the debate and particularly this statement by Donald Trump.
Ben and I are coming at this election from different points along the political spectrum, but frankly, I would subscribe to every word he just uttered. I think that was a perfectly sensible, balanced, and fair analysis of what happened. If I were to take issue with any piece of it and offer a slightly different point of view, it is true that the American people as a whole, if you look at the statistics, have withdrawn a lot of trust and confidence, not only from political institutions, but other major institutions in our society. But the degree of withdrawal, the loss of confidence, the mistrust, and even anger, is much more pervasive and goes much deeper among Mr. Trump's supporters than among the supporters of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And so it's not just the sentiments that he's channeling, but also their intensity and their alienation from the mainstream of American political and social life that I think is noteworthy. I also think it's dangerous because accepting the results of an election and living together as Americans under one democratic political system has been the great strength of this country. It broke down once, and the consequence was a horrendous civil war that claimed nearly 700,000 lives at the time that the American population was only about a tenth of what it is today. So this is a game for very high stakes, and I think Mr. Trump owes it to the country to try to walk this back and convince his supporters to accept the results of the election, whatever they may be.
In that light, we have heard from many, and some of whom are Republican lawmakers, like Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona has tweeted that he says that states are backed by tens of thousands of both Republican and Democratic volunteers to ensure the integrity of the electoral process. He said elections are not rigged. So in addition to that, Ben Domenech here in the studio, let me read to you an email statement that we received from one of our most loyal listeners, Ray Ondaro from Nairobi, Kenya. Because as you know, people around the world are watching and feel that it's almost their election. So he says, people in this side of the world have been left wondering whether they're hearing right. A presidential election to be rigged in America? The greatest democracy in the world? Come on, America. You're not some third world country where at times elections are rigged with ease. So, Ray says, with just a few weeks left until the presidential election, and if Mr. Trump should continue in that streak, what does that toxic rhetoric portend for American democracy as we've always known? Please help unpack it for us.
I think it portends, and I appreciate the note, I think it portends less for the future of American democracy than it does for the future of Donald Trump. Mr. Trump has burned through an enormous amount of brand capital over the course of this election. His comments have turned off a number of people who previously were perfectly happy to either buy his products or stay at his hotels. And in the wake of this election, he's going to be in a position where he needs to rebuild his support and to find new support from those who in the prior period of his life were happy customers for him, even past the point where he engaged in a lot of politically toxic rhetoric. The problem I think that he has is that he has approached the last month of this campaign by doubling down for all of the people who already supported him, as opposed to trying to reach out to new voters who might be open to his message, particularly as it relates to the economy. And to circle back to something that Bill said, I think the real divide here is between people who feel that we are living in a time that is relatively crime-free, that is an economy that is not perhaps growing the way we would like it to, but is relatively stable, and those who live in areas or live close to areas that never really came back from the economic disaster of several years ago. It is that proximity to anxiety that is one of the defining characteristics of Trump's most strong supporters, because they see a world that is very different from the one that those living in other parts of America do. And I think that's one of the reasons why they'll be more susceptible to the kind of message that Trump has said to them all along, which is that it's not their fault. It's the fault of immigration. It's the fault of bad trade deals. It's the fault of politicians who are interested in representing the powerful as opposed to the people who elect them. And this is just one more example of that. It's not your fault that I lost. It's the fault of a rigged system.
Some of the issues are important and are valid, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But let me get Bill Galston to react to what our listener from Nairobi, Kenya, just said. Is this, Bill Galston, something that will just hurt Donald Trump's brand, so to speak? Or what he said, is that damaging fundamentally to American democracy? And does it send a message to perhaps his supporters that, you know, they can go out to some voting precincts and intimidate? This is a concern.
I suspect we'll get through this election without a lot of disruption. The system is much too well monitored for that to happen. I think there will be consequences for the Republican Party, which now I think needs to initiate a long-deferred conversation about its future. It also has consequences for America in the world, and that is what worries me the most. To an extent that many Americans are not aware of and perhaps have forgotten, the stability of the current global order depends on a strong America, an America that has not only military might and economic might, but also moral authority. If people begin to doubt the strength and stability of our most fundamental political institutions, that could have consequences that go well beyond the political sphere and affect their willingness to accept our leadership, to join forces with us when the chips are down. And you could very well see a growth of instability and volatility in the world order, even beyond what we see today. And the fact that Mr. Trump has called into question the structure of the alliances that the United States has created and sustained since the Second World War just adds fuel to that fire. So I think the next president, and I expect that next president to be former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, is going to have a lot of repair work to do with jittery friends and allies around the world.
If I may, to Bill's point on this, the real utility of what Donald Trump is saying about the American process abounds to the benefit of America's foes around the world who would like to make America equal to everything that they do when it comes to trying to have an impact on foreign elections, when it comes to pushing forward a number of different narratives about the way that America does business that relegates it to something less than what it has been, which is, as Bill says, a sustainer of the global order. The difficulty really is, of course, that we are at a point in history where the Congress and the media in this country are at single digits in terms of Americans' trust and approval for them. And in such a climate, it's going to prove very challenging for someone like even Hillary Clinton, who has been through a lot, to chart a path forward that sustains and grows faith in not just these institutions, but in America's role as a global power and as a sustainer of the global order.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are William Galston, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and former policy advisor to former President Bill Clinton, and Ben Domenech. He's publisher of The Federalist. And we are discussing the fallout from the final presidential debate and themes that have dominated the campaign in recent days. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Lagos, Nigeria, Goodness Chidi. Well, let's continue with our discussion about the debate and some of the issues. Back to you, Ben Domenech, here in the studio. There was quite a bit of talk with respect to Russian espionage here, the hacking of private emails of the Democratic National Committee. Again, Mr. Trump refuses to acknowledge what the U.S. government has confirmed, that the hand of Russia is behind the hacking of the Democratic National Committee and those of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. And this type of activity undermines faith in the system. What do we make of this?
So there's a lot of things to make of it. One is, I think that the Russian operation in respect to the American election is one that has been going on for quite some time. As an observer within the Republican primary, I was sounding notes on this very early on regarding the social media presence of Russian trolls and bots who essentially are falsified accounts. The New York Times has done great reporting on this, of the various bot farms that are run out of Russia and out of their client states. And they use the same approach that they have used in other nations in the past to try to impact their elections. The difference this time around, I think, is that the rollout of the kinds of information, private emails, etc., from the DNC and from other Democratic figures has had an impact in the sense that it's revealed a number of things that have been embarrassing from the perspective of the DNC. But the thing is, there's actually not as much there as you might expect. And what it actually reveals is just that the Clinton operation runs in a lot of the ways that its critics have expected it to run, that it does have these interactions with corporate America and that it engages in a lot of back and forth and what you might describe as favor trading when it comes to what they do with their friends. That's not really a surprise, though. And I think that there was some kind of anticipation on the part of both people who were sympathetic to Russia and also people who were backing Mr. Trump that there would be some kind of enormous smoking gun or October surprise when it came to Secretary Clinton and the release of these emails. Instead, that has not come to pass. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the conversation today is much more about the October surprise as it relates to Donald Trump and the release of this Access Hollywood video showing him saying misogynistic things, as opposed to any big revelation about Clinton wrongdoing, and that's abounded to her benefit.
Bill Galston, on this same theme, President Obama has even said that the flattery of Mr. Putin by Donald Trump, the degree to which Donald Trump appears to model many of Vladimir Putin's policies and approaches to politics, is unprecedented in American politics and is out of step, not with just what Democrats think, but out of step with what most Republicans think.
There's no doubt about that. But let me take this same issue in a slightly different direction. I was astonished that during the final presidential debate that Mr. Trump continues to deny that we know that the Russians are actually behind this, despite the fact that with rare unanimity, all of our intelligence services have affirmed Russian culpability beyond a reasonable doubt. This is part of a broader trend that began immediately after Mr. Trump became eligible to receive classified intelligence briefings and began to do so. There started to be noises out of the Trump campaign to the effect that he really didn't believe what he was hearing from the intelligence services. Now, on the one hand, as we know painfully well, they are not infallible. On the other hand, to enter a briefing with the presumption that what you're hearing is not true, is not persuasive, is not well-sourced, is perhaps even unfounded or slanted in a particular direction because of the self-interest of people in the intelligence services, is a very, very dangerous attitude for a potential president of the United States to bring to these briefings. And I really thought that in the final debate, Mr. Trump would acknowledge the provenance of these emails and leaks and then go on to build on the content rather than disputing their source.
Indeed. Well, many would say that this does speak to Mr. Trump's fitness or temperament for the job. But turning to another topic, back to you here in the studio, Ben Domenech, on foreign policy, many Democrats and Republicans would say that Donald Trump has some important points in terms of his critique of U.S. foreign policy during the Obama administration. One might not agree with most of what Mr. Trump says, but some of his critique with respect to the Obama administration's policy in Iraq, Syria in particular, has not gone very well. So that's a point on which Hillary Clinton is rather vulnerable, because I think she, too, has some disagreements with the Obama administration, even while she was Secretary of State, but is probably not in a very good position to talk about that, and that puts her in a very vulnerable position.
She has had to walk a real tightrope on these issues, not just because of her role within the Obama administration, but because of a number of decisions she's made over the course of her career. I thought it was interesting that one of the questions that she kind of dodged on within this final debate was whether a no-fly zone being created in Syria, what that would mean if there was a jet that violated that airspace or could potentially lead to a greater conflict. The real hesitancy that I have, though, in judging Mr. Trump when it comes to these critiques of foreign policy is that they are all very convenient. He has held numerous positions on these issues over the years, depending on the moment that you asked and context at which he made these decisions. A comment given to a radio shock jock is not the same as a vote on the Senate floor, obviously, when it comes to these issues. And so I do think, though, that the reason that his critique had some staying power, not just early within the Republican primaries, but with some of the supporters of Bernie Sanders, who seem to be more Trump sympathetic than you might have expected, given their domestic policy views, is that he is speaking for a group of Americans who are honestly fed up with the level of activity that we've had overseas in the course of the past two decades, really. In terms of the American impact here, we view that in the measure of lost lives, in the measure of money, in the measure of what we've given in order to achieve, from the perspective of many Americans, very little, particularly as it relates to the Middle East. The challenge, of course, for Hillary Clinton, assuming that she does become president, is that all around the world there are areas that need to be addressed when it comes to our relationships with them. There's so many trouble spots around the world that President Clinton would have to address. And on the foreign policy critique of Donald Trump, it's not going to go away. It's still something that's going to be an issue in the years to come. And it's a question of whether, in reaction to what President Clinton does, whether more people start to have that view within the Republican coalition.
Bill Galston, your take on the foreign policy debate briefly. To what extent, you know, Donald Trump, while he may be opportunistic in his critiques, you know, may have a point on U.S. foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East, which is very disappointing to many in the Democratic Party as well.
I would say it's been disappointing to a majority of the American people. We have been at war in the Middle East for more than 15 years. The investment has been substantial in money, in men, and materiel, and the results have been disappointing. At the same time, our commitments around the world are helping to keep the peace. And if the American people are weary of war now, just imagine what would happen if the Russians got even feistier than they have been in Europe, or the Chinese, who've been flexing their muscles vis-a-vis their neighbors, really decided to notch up the aggression even more than they have under the new leadership in recent years. So her task as president of the United States will be, to use Ben's phrase, to continue to walk that tightrope. With regard to Secretary of State Clinton's relationship with the record of the Obama administration, I absolutely agree that she's in a tough spot. She did disagree with many of the decisions that President Obama made in the Middle East, particularly in Syria. And I suspect that those disagreements are going to translate into a change of policy in Syria if she's elected president of the United States.
Well, gentlemen, as we close in the very few minutes we have left, back to you, Ben Domenech, here in the studio. I would like to address this accusation or allegation by Donald Trump about media bias. Do you think the media is so dishonest and so corrupt, the pile-on, as Mr. Trump says, so amazing that it helps to benefit Hillary Clinton more than him?
During the primaries, Donald Trump experienced something that we have never seen before in the history of presidential politics, which is that his rallies were run nonstop by the vast majority of the cable because their incentive is ratings. But what this really benefited him in terms of the overall number is essentially an enormous amount of free media, by far more than we have ever seen any candidate receive. Now that he is at a point, though, where he doesn't have the wall-to-wall rallies, he's less happy about the media treatment of him.
Well, you get the last word, Bill Galston, with respect to media bias. Is it dishonest and corrupt, as Mr. Trump says, or are they pretty much following the money and looking for ratings, and they'll go wherever the publicity is?
Here's an old saying that I think applies: live by the sword, die by the sword. The free media that Mr. Trump received during the primaries has been credibly estimated at $2 billion. That's what it would have cost him to buy what he got for free.
All right, a topic for another program. But in the meantime, we'll be bringing you all the news in the run-up to our election on November 8th. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, William Galston. He's senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, former policy advisor to President Bill Clinton, and Ben Domenech, publisher of The Federalist. Thank you, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Our pleasure.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Nashwan Kale. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.